You're listening to The Blind Spot, a podcast from Thomas Pocklington Trust.
Hello and a warm welcome to this special edition of The Blind Spot podcast for National Braille Week. I'm Darren Pascal and I describe myself quite often not only as being a technology manager but a self-confessed Braille enthusiast. And I'm unashamedly proud of my love for Braille and all things Braille. So it's great to be here for National Braille Week. And this year we're going to be looking at Braille from a slightly different perspective to normal. We're going to look at what it's like to learn Braille a little bit later on in life. What are the challenges? What are the benefits? Is it possible? Yes, it is possible. But how does it look? How does it feel? And what can we do to help people embark on their journey to learning Braille? So to explore this, I am delighted to be joined by a Braille teacher and a wonderful lady who is very keen on Braille too. It's Norma Williams. Hello, Norma.
Hi, Darren.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
It's wonderful to have you here on the Blind Spot podcast this afternoon. Thank you very much for joining us. I'm wondering, as a sort of a starter for 10, really, if you could maybe tell us a little bit about, well, your sight condition, first of all.
Yes, Darren, I've got Usher syndrome. I've got type 1. My hearing, you know, as if there was a crowd when I was a child, it used to seem like I couldn't hear anything that was going on. So my sight was affected more, and that's why it was hard to diagnose me at first. Until I had two massive detached retinas, I basically was partially sighted. So it's like everything, you don't wait for it to come to you. So I was carrying on with my life as usual. And I did skate past a bit of Braille when I was young. I wasn't very impressed, like most young people. And as I got older, technology got more advanced and I was quite good at technology. I went through rehabilitation because it was quite sudden that I lost most of my vision.
You fully lost your vision a little bit later on in life, is that?
Yeah, but I was always sight impaired.
Okay, yeah.
I didn't feel like it's hard. And I think psychologically, I was always able to get my head around these things happen and try and find the best solution to the problem that I'm going to have. So I went to what we call a rehabilitation centre. One of the modules that the rehabilitation officer did with me was Braille. And I just took to it. And I don't know why. I think it was the thought of being able to read books and things like that, not having to listen to books. I thought, well, I'm going to have a go at this because I've had a go before and it might be different this time. And it was completely different because it helped me with brain-to-hand coordination. And only a sight impaired person would know what I was talking about because you've got to try to get your brain to coordinate your body without being able to see things. So even walking around in the, no way people walk around in the dark. If people walk around in the dark, you've got vision. It might be a bit scary for you, but if you can't see anything in the dark through a sight condition, then you learn pretty quick how to navigate. You have to go slowly and you start getting used to your own environment. But I was going to do Braille and I was going to do it really well. And eventually, when I retire, I was going to teach it voluntary to other people and be positive about it and show them the positive things that they can get from it. Not just about reading and writing. It's about your brain and how your hands can function without sight.
Yeah, absolutely. And my goodness, all sorts of things I can think of to ask you that I think would be really good to talk about kind of following on from this. And the first question that I've got, we will come back to this theme of kind of exploring things and being a bit more tactile, because I think you've got some very interesting insights on this. But before we get to that, I'm going to go back a little bit, because Well, you've said that you learned Braille while going through rehab shortly after you lost your remaining vision. Do you regret not learning Braille earlier in life?
I think it was never taught to me as ambitious that I teach it. I teach it in a way that I'm telling people that it's not source of a teaching. It's me passing on a system in a way. I think I got it to me as though it was the thing that's what was going to happen, that I was going to communicate that way. And it's not a communication system at all. It's like a code. And it can be a private code. It's your ownership of it. And you can do as much as you want or as less as you want. And I don't go on, oh, I'm getting you to this level, because I want you to enjoy it. So it's about us being confident that we've got ability to do things that probably sizes of people haven't.
Yeah, I mean, it's very interesting when you look at the origins of Braille, such as it was 200 years ago, because of course its kind of inspiration, if you like, some would say, came from the French military war effort, trying to find means of creating a secret code that couldn't be deciphered.
It is a secret code, because say it was two people who can do Braille in a room and they were Brailing to each other, they're the only two people that would be able to read that, because there is a code, and it's a code that everyone can learn. But I don't know whether you found it, when I was getting taught it, and I was very intense, because the person who taught me took me so far. And then what she done, she put me with someone who's got a degree in it, because she said to me, we do it as a module, Norma. You know, it wasn't a career. So she put me with someone that was as enthusiastic about it as I was. Once you learn grade one, everything starts to make sense. Because when you're doing long words and long form, and you think, this is a long word, and then someone tells you, I've got a little secret, you can shorten that. It was like solving a problem. I don't think I would have had the abilities to do that, but it put me in that frame that I can do shorthand. The only difference is we call it different than that, you know, but it's the same principle.
No, that's right. I completely agree with you on that. In fact, my mum was very proficient shorthand typist, and she actually, completely without me knowing, started to teach herself Braille and took to it very quickly because of her shorthand knowledge. Yeah, I completely agree with you on that. I'm thinking about some of the challenges that might come up for you learning Braille later in life, but also for you teaching others a bit later in life how to get to grips with Braille so that they can do whatever it is they want to do, whether it's, you know, reading medicine packets or whatever. Where do you start with somebody? Say I come to you, Norma, and I say, right, I'd like you to teach me Braille. Where does it all begin?
I start by being enthusiastic about it. I remember how I learned and how I was enthusiastic about it. And I'm not a teacher. I don't call myself a teacher. And I like to make it intriguing for people. And I don't make it as a competition. I learn different ways for different people. I've got, of course, to use the egg boxes. We all use them, don't we?
Absolutely.
But then I started looking for other tools to aid people, because don't forget, as you get older, your sensory on your fingertips goes a bit bland. This is how I read Braille. I don't read dots. I read the space in between.
So I've got
my own way of doing it. I think everyone has got their own way of doing it. To me, space is shape, and that's how I do it. Because that's all I say to them, basically. And in my head, I've got a cell, which is six dots.
Right, yep.
Because I'm trying to get them to imagine it. But then we go through that, you know, trying to get the imagination working. I taught my granddaughter, and she picked her up a lot quicker because she's got an imagination. We lose our imagination. So it's this picture in your head you have, and that's what I try to get people to do, because I won't let people have written stuff. That's the only rule. Let's do it blind, basically.
Now
that makes sense.
Now that does. Now this interests me. Do you think that could actually be an advantage for people who can see, who are actually being forced to think about Braille, not in terms of how they're seeing it, but kind of almost as if, well, now you're, you know, using your fingers or kind of imagining how things, you know, how Braille should appear. It's almost freeing up your vision a bit, isn't it?
Well, it's giving you a break. You've got macular degeneration. If your central vision's disturbed, you want to try harder to see things by straining yourself. Because I want you to feel it. It's not a competition. I say Braille's not a competition. It's not. It's just basically something to sort of get your mind going. I think repetitiveness stays with you. And without, it's no use having three people that can see a bit trying to say, and then I just don't see the point. I really don't. Mm. And I know a lot of teachers that let people read stuff, and I say to them, it's pointless. I'm not learning you to read and write. I'm learning your code. And this will give your mind make it function better. And it does. It can be. I mean, there's been research on it with Alzheimer's. You know, it's doing tactile. I always knew that was possible, because your brain, it's how you use it. It's how you keep memory.
Well, it kind of comes to me, at least, it comes back to what it is that people, that's motivating people to want to learn Braille. I mean, generally, I would think that unless you're looking to master Braille to teach other people in a profession or something, you know, your motivation for learning Braille is probably not so that you can recognize the shapes by looking at them, but it's so that you can actually use it to kind of feel them, because, you know, it's there to help somebody who actually can't see to read the newspaper or post or whatever, still give you access to all the to whatever information you might want to have access to, isn't it?
I believe I could teach people to read. I try and change the narrative a bit and say, you can do this. Mm. You know? And even if they couldn't at the end of the day, it's the encouraging words that you give people. And they will be able to read something. I mean, they write. And then they get a bit frustrated with reading, which I did as well when I started reading. But you've got to believe that it's not going to be easy, because it isn't easy. I think it was an achievement for me in a way. I think, you know, some people do it for a job. I've done it for pleasure. And I think that's what I try and tell other people. People might tell you technologies took over Braille. You know, people who got taught Braille when they were young, they're the biggest downers of Braille most of the time, because they'll go, oh, it's too slow and technology took over. And I think, why can't you have both?
Absolutely. We've established that Braille is useful for anybody, or could be useful for anybody who might have a reason to learn it or to use it. Norma, what do you think are the challenges, and what do you think the future holds for Braille? How can we be using Braille to the best of our abilities and make sure that it will continue to help people for years to come?
Okay. For therapies such as people who've had strokes, people who've got Alzheimer's and dementia, the tactility of it would be useful. You could do very basic things with it, but the same system. For children, which I'm really particularly fond of trying to push the narrative, we need more teachers who have a combination of technology and Braille, so that the children can have Braille machines that are attached to the computer. They're as independent as possible without having to use all of the other stuff that people have made a lot of money out of. And I think I'd like the kids to be taught at an age the combination of Braille with technology. Yep. But we need the right teaching and the right teachers to be able to deliver that. Whereas if we make sure that they've got the right technology and the right teaching, they could do any job any person's doing. we need to get the right systems in place, because all the technology is great. Yours is great for what it is, and you know, the rest of it. But I just think we need to sometimes push what people think is the norm, and make sure that the teachers are able to teach both sides of that coin, both Braille and technology combined.
Absolutely. I mean, if you know, I couldn't agree more. There are going to be, surely the idea of going through school is that every child, regardless of their disability or anything, aspect of life, should have the opportunity to achieve their potential.
Yeah, but you know, and I know, that if they're taught from an early age, the things that we've had to take years to do, why do they have to wait years? If they come, I just think it needs to be seen. I think, you know, there's still stigmas with sight impairments, of course, like any disability. I just think it's a bit sad that people see obstacles. So then, you know, when people are going for jobs, are young people that I want, you know, I want to inspire, then that's hard for them. Because as soon as they walk through the door, there's already the obstacles there, even though you're supposed to be able to be given a chance. 9 times out of 10, if the people don't change their minds who are given the jobs, look at the future, is that these kids can do any job other than, you know, there's things that they can't do, but the majority of jobs they can.
Yeah, absolutely.
Change the mindset of sighted people. I'd like more people to be open-minded and give the kids the chances and make sure that they've got technology and they're teaching in the right way, and that kids are inspired by the teaching. Because with sight impairment, sometimes when there's a group of kids in the classroom, it's hard to concentrate. And I think Braille, you can concentrate with that.
Absolutely. Wow. Well, Norma, all we can do is thank you for being such a wonderful, wonderful guest on our Blind Spot podcast this month for National Braille Week. And yeah, thank you very much. It's been absolutely wonderful talking to you.
Thanks so much.
You're listening to The Blind Spot, a podcast from Thomas Pocklington Trust.